हरि श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
continue with the Dharma Shastra. Okay, so okay, we just started the law of marriage, right? You don't know.
Yeah.
You don't attend this class. You're a strict brahmachari, and you heard that they're going to be discussing marriage, so you're trying to figure out.
That's it. Okay. Forget it.
Take my bucket of halva, and we're gone. In other words, you didn't bring it with you.
That's true.
I see. What did you think we would do? Play charades?
I didn't think. I have to write an offering to my Guru Maharaj, and I have to send it today, so I was pretty busy at work doing that.
I see.
So my mind was elsewhere.
I see.
Okay. I apologize.
Yeah, this is not my problem. You didn't want that kind of paper. Okay. So in Grihastha, okay, so this is in Grihastha Ashram. So to become a Grihastha, the Brahmachari has to graduate, right? Because then his term as studying as a Brahmachari is finished. It doesn't mean studying will finish. Yes.
What page?
41. It's the first page of the third chapter. Okay. So the law of marriage. Having bathed with the permission of his teacher and performed according to the rule of Sambartana, the rite on returning home, a twice-born man shall marry a wife of equal nature who is endowed with auspiciousness. Vritti, having bathed, indicates having been sprinkled with water during the Sambartana rite. The samskara signifies the completion of the student's vows of brahmacharya. But, so that means he's graduated. Means he's best as he's completed his vow and his study, right? If not, he's completed his vow. Maybe his study's not finished. Then next is he's completed his study, but not his vow. You know, and worst would be he didn't complete the study or the vow. So in other words, let's say he's staying in the Gurukul for 12 years, right? Standard course of study, and he's supposed to finish studying, you know, one Veda. So, if he's finished that Veda, which easily can be done in 12 years, he's finished the Veda, he's finished his 12 years, he graduates, that's considered the best. Right? Or he finished 12 years, but he wasn't that sharp, he didn't finish the Veda. But he has the character. So that's the most important. Or he finished the Veda, let's say he was sharp and this and that, or whatever, and so after 8 years, then he graduates. Right, instead of staying those other 4 years. So that means then there's not as much character, because otherwise he's too restless. Right? And if he didn't stay for the whole time and didn't finish the Veda, then that means he's got more problems. Right?
So if someone enjoys Krishna consciousness maybe later on, but then they want to be a brahmachari, they should maybe still wait that 12 years?
No. It means 12 years is a standard. So whatever it is, let's say you come, that's a standard, but let's say the person comes at 12, you know, and then, you know, they want to stay for a certain amount of years. The point is, whatever the vow is, you stay for that much time. I mean, 12 years is a standard, but you generally would mean you're coming when you're 5 years old or something like that. But when you come later, it means you've got less time. You know, it means if you can do, then that's great. You know, if somebody's not, you know, comfortable with that, and they come when they're 18 and stay until they're 30 and get married at 30, then fine. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's the point. Or, you know, he comes to he's 18, you know, a couple of years, and then... Importance is placed on marrying a wife of equal nature, as the combination of parents having similar inclinations will more effectively produce children with a clearly defined nature. Furthermore, verse 3:15 states, twice were men who in their folly wed Shudras soon degrade their families and their children to the state of Shudras. In other words, the nature of the family generally is takes on the quality of the woman, right? The man will create the environment, but actually how that environment is going to be managed or run, what's the moods and flavors is going to be the wife. Right? So therefore, whatever her values in that is what she's going to do. Right? She's going to... Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's going to therefore affect the children. So it just means the husband has to act within something compatible to that. And the children are naturally just going to grow up and imbibe that. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why one has to be very careful. One can always say, oh no, it doesn't matter, the rules, you know, it's love, we can make it all work, and this and that. Great. There's love, and then there's the actual mechanics, the reality. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's not out of love that the guy drops his socks all over the house. You know? Does that make sense? That's not how it's working. It's due to lack of training. So therefore, if his lack of training is similar to her lack of training, they're both slobs, it works fine. Right? Because he'll leave stuff all over the house, she'll leave stuff all over the house, right? Not a problem. It doesn't bother each other. And why did they leave it all over the house, right? Because they're not conscious of it, or they're a bit lazy, or, you know, it doesn't matter. It gives that homey feeling, not so sterile environment, right? And it's not a problem for them either, because the maid will come along and pick it all up. Right? Does that make sense? But even if they're both like that, guaranteed, her level of slovenliness will be just a touch less than his. So there'll always be something to fight over. So don't worry that it'll become boring. You know? No, there'll always be that little bit of something like that. You know. You know what I'm saying? You know, one sock more, you know, like that. This is it. I can't do it anymore. It's such a pig pen, you know, like that. You know, yeah one sock. Huh?
Then
it might get burned. Yeah. Okay, so now we're discussing a twice marry a woman of equal nature who is endowed with auspiciousness, right? A twice born man, because there are three levels of twice born, so he should marry within that and shouldn't marry outside twice born, right? But the principle is there. A Shudra should marry a woman of equal nature. In other words, a Shudra. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is the nature is the same, so they get along. Their children's nature are the same. They all get along. So it's one happy family. You know, the problem is the husband's one nature, the mother's another nature. That means the children will be a third nature. And then we talk about, you know, how is it, you know, the family seems falling apart because all three people are different natures. You know what I'm saying? Is that something? A damsel who is neither a sapinda on the mother's side, nor belongs to the same family on the father's side, is recommended to twice-born men for wedlock and conjugal union. Right? So you have to be sapinda and sagotra. Right? Vritti. A sapinda is one who has a common ancestor within the previous seven generations. Right? That means on the mother's side. Anybody, her family is connected to your family within it means the seventh generation is okay, but it's within six, then it's too close. Right? So Gotra, same family, one who is the same family line, he's descending from the same Prajapati. That makes sense? It is recommended to twice born... Oh, no, excuse me, we're down here. In other words, their lineage is traceable to the same person amongst the 21 Prajapatis, right? So that's why you can ask those, you know, from cultured families, what's a Gotra? They know the Gotra. And they also know back seven generations. Right? So technically speaking, what it says is somebody is a dvija should not marry anybody who is doesn't know their gotra or doesn't know, you know, the line of the pindas, right? They don't know seven generations in their family, and they don't know, then you're not supposed to marry someone like that. That's if you know. If you don't know, hey, cool, then don't worry about it. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is all those within the Kasyapa Gotra, you know, unless they're Kasyapa Gotra by, they know their Gotra. But if you don't know your Gotra, you're Kasyapa Gotra. That means, and who is in the family of Kasyapa?
Demons.
All the demons, yeah. So therefore, you know, don't worry about it. You know, hey, it's open season. Right? Yes. Well, we already defined the one side. The other side, you go, there's little agencies you go to, and they'll give you your whole history back, you know. So, yes, you go to them, and they'll go back and tell you. It costs lots of money, but they'll tell you. But in other words, if you're dealing, especially if you're in a village and that everybody's there, you have to be more careful. When you're in the bigger cities, then there's less chance. You know? But still, it's something that should be looked at. You know what I'm saying? Yes? No? Okay. In connecting himself with a wife, let him carefully avoid the following families, be they ever so great or rich and kind, horses, sheep, grain, or other property. So in other words, they're very famous, they're very powerful, they're very wealthy. It doesn't matter, these particular families, then the generally speaking, you know, especially a Brahmin would avoid. So, but you know, anybody who's cultured. So one who neglects the sacred rites, right? So someone who's not interested in the samskaras, doesn't deal with any of these things, doesn't worry about sadhana, generally one should avoid those families, right? One in which the Veda is not studied, right? So who Vedic knowledge is not important and everything like this, right? So as you can see, most of this is going to be of value to the second generation on. First generation, probably each one of these things, you know.
Deal breaker.
Yeah, like that. So you don't worry about it. That's what I'm saying. It's like that. Like that. Okay. That let him not marry a maiden who talks excessively and disagreeably or has red eyes. Right? Because talk too much just means, you know, when do you have a conversation, right? You know? Or disagreeably, it's always a fight. So disagreeably here doesn't mean that there are some points of disagreement. It means it's always like that. Doesn't matter what you do. Or has red eyes. Why would she have red eyes?
Furious.
Yeah, she's always angry, always this, always like that. So these ones are generally avoided. Because these are standard that everybody could be careful of. All the ones in small print, then, you know, like that, like you know, G over there, the country he comes from, everybody has tawny hair. There's no one who doesn't. You know, it's like that. So you're going to have, yeah, like that. Okay. But a prudent man should not marry a maiden who has no brother, nor one whose father is not known, through fear lest he should commit sin. Because, in other words, if she doesn't know, she has no brother, she has no father, you don't know anything about her, she might be Supinda or Sugotra. You don't know. You know, it didn't work out well for, you know, Oedipus, you know, like that. Because, you know what I'm saying? Oedipus? No, Oedipus. Some Greek dude who ended up, he went away for some time as a kid and came back as an adult and came back and fell in love with his own mother and killed his father, and then only later on found out that that's what happened, because nobody knew who he was and he didn't know who they were. So therefore one has to be a little careful in that. That's there. It means if there's some idea that you, does this make sense? So it's, in other words, the consideration, you're being careful of these things, right? Now in all this, what it says about, especially about the family, that's what's meant, that one may find a good girl in a bad family. So the girl is that good, then don't worry about the family. Does that make sense? But generally, you would start looking at families that have stature, because we always have to remember the girl may be good, but the other members of the family are now relatives. So that means they come by, they come over, they come and, you know, just, you know, make your life part of their life, and it may be nice or may not be nice. So it's always to be considered. Because the point is they are relatives, you can't ignore them. Right? Yes?
There's this joke in Denmark where it's a thunderstorm outside and the doorbell rings and the man goes out and opens. And it's his mother-in-law. And he says, "Why are you standing out there in the rain? Go home."
Okay. You heard it, you didn't hear. You heard it. Like that. Everybody has those. I'm just saying, mothers-in-law and landladies, everybody has jokes about it. And then whoever's in the next country, right?
You know, yeah. So,
like that. So it's everybody has that. You know, it could be anybody. I mean, you have the Shantipur jokes. I mean, they take it to a new level. Because it's not just, why mothers-in-law? Anybody, you know, like that. You know, so it's like, I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Shantipur is famous for fine cloth and Vaishnava aparad. And they're so smooth at it. They're so good. One time we were there with the boat party, you know, so we're there doing Harinam and that, and just they're so good at insults. you know, so like the one guy comes up, because we're Westerners, and he comes up and very pleasantly goes, "What kind of brahmacharis are you? Because, you know, you're obviously not Naistika." You know, it's so smoothly said, you know, it's just so nice, you know, like that. You know, it's just, they're amazing, you know, like that. They always have. So one of them is that the person comes to the door, and when the guy opens the door, and then the person inside the house says, "Next time you come, you must stay for dinner. I insist." And then closes the door. Like that. So, you know, like that. So like that. Everybody has their. Oh, and there's another point is, yeah, here you don't have to worry about. That means. Is that she may be according there, but an appointed daughter, but you don't really have that in the modern context. Appointed daughter means her son will be her father's son, right? You know, just like Arjuna. But I mean, as long as you're cool with that, it's okay. But like Arjuna, when she married the Manipur princess, Chitranga. So Chitrangada, she was an appointed daughter. So that meant her son is going, because the father has no son, so her daughter's son will be his son. In the way of performing rites or hereditary, or, you know, in this case, he'll become the next king, like that. So for Arjuna, because he's not the primary wife, it's not a problem. Because it's Draupadi's children will become the next kings, right? But so here, then it's like that. So then Babruvahan, then he becomes the next king of Manipur. No, he's Arjuna's son. He'll deal his father, but as far as the legalities, it'll be with his grandfather. Does that make sense? So if you're planning on having children, doing the whole thing with, you know, all that kind of stuff, then you don't want to marry an appointed, you know, a girl who's an appointed daughter. Does that make sense? So that's why you don't know these things. Vriti, an appointed daughter is the girl designated that her son shall perform the death rites of her father, that is, of the child's maternal grandfather. If the maiden's father is unknown, then it's possible that one would commit the sin of marrying a close relative, Pindara Sagotra. Yajnavalkya says, a twice-born one whose celibacy has not been disturbed should marry a maiden endued with auspicious marks, who has not been previously known by anyone before, nor not previously promised to anyone, who is Asapinda, younger in age, free from incurable diseases, has a brother, is born in a different gotra, and is distanced from his mother's family by at least 5 degrees, and that of his father by at least 7. Right? Because the women in the family are already coming from somewhere else anyway. So there's more mix, so then it'll work out better. But in the father's family, no, it's always the same. You always have the same, it's always that one mix and then something else. Mm. But on the women, it's always, because they're always changing the family, so it's always mixing, so like that. Yes.
think this is the second time when they mentioned having a brother.
Having a brother.
Advantage. Why is this?
Having a brother, because it means if they have a brother, then you have that. One is then there's more people to take care and then fall back on emotionally. She would have also grown up with more emotional support. Because if the father's there, then that's one thing. But then on an equal level, where's that emotional kind of interaction? So if there's a brother, then there's that kind of like that. It's, you know, that informal closeness. Does that make sense? Because of the father, there's a formality there, you know. And then if she has a son, then, you know, there's there. So it just broadens the whole thing. It means if she doesn't, means the point is because it's not that everything has to be perfect. There's also mentioned here, notice here, a twice born one whose celibacy has not been disturbed, then he then should look for someone like this. Because otherwise you have, you know, as Western devotees where they definitely don't necessarily fall into this category. And then they're looking, the girl has to be so perfect and exact and this and all according to Shastra and that, but they're not anywhere near Shastra. You know, like that. You don't even get any fragrance left over. You know, it's like there's nothing, you know, and they're swearing like this, like that. You know, so the point is this balance of equal nature. So therefore, if he's from, you know, this kind of crazy Western background, so she's from that crazy Western background, then they have some, there's some natural
reasons.
Yeah, and like that. But if he marries a girl who's from a better background, nice. But it shouldn't be a boy from a better background marries a girl from a worse background, because the children take on the nature of the mother. You know what I'm saying? So it will improve. That if the boy is not as from as a cultured background the girl is, as long as that's compatible natures, then the whole family will tend to be more cultured. You know what I'm saying? But the person has to know how to deal with culture, otherwise it'll be lost. You know, it's just like if I give somebody a lot of money, it's not that you take a beggar off the street and suddenly, you know, and reach out the window, he comes up to beg like that, you roll down the window and hand him a bundle of, you know, full bundle of 1,000 rupee notes. It's not that you'll come back the next day and see in the same spot he's got a shop going and he's dressed nicely and, you know, everything's happening for him.
He's dead.
Yeah, he's dead or he's crazy or, you know, something, you know, it won't work out, you know. So that's what I said, is even the benefit is there unless a person has the character. So that's why you have to match the character like that. Does that make sense? A bridegroom should be endowed with all the accomplishments enumerated above. So that's that was the bride, now the bridegroom. So there's always a match. That's the thing, is we'll take the one side. Like I said, if we say, okay, what do the Vedas say about the duties of a woman? You know, like that. There's a good chance all the men will raise their hand. Right? Does that make sense? But if we say, what are the duties of man?
Down go the hands.
Yeah, the hands go down, or it's just like, provide, you know, we provide. Yeah, we're the providers. You know the hunter-gatherers. You know, like that. So, but that's it. I even had one husband in full sincerity and complete conviction, and also a lot of, you know, how you say, aggressiveness, just make the point that, you know, he's read to Prabhupada's books and he found nowhere where Prabhupada says that you have to give any emotional support to your wife. There's no place where you said you only have to provide facility. That's it. You know? But the point is you're providing facility for a woman. What's a woman made out of? So that means if you're not providing the emotional, you're not providing for a woman. But he can't, there was absolutely no way he could understand this. Does that make sense? So it's these things are, so it always goes both ways. It'll describe the one, it'll describe the other. Bridegroom should be endowed with all the accomplishments enumerated above. Be of the same caste and social standing. Well read in the Vedas. Carefully examined about his manly power, youthful, intelligent, and agreeable to all the people. There is a saying that the twice-born ones can get their wives from among Shudras. I do not approve of it, for the Atma itself is born there in the wife as the son. Right, so this is Yajnavalkya. So he's making the point that it's said that the Dvija couldn't have a Shudra for a wife. Right? But it's never, Manu will bring it out, it's never to be the first wife. So if you have many wives, then one of them might be a Shudra. But it's not recommended. Right? It's recommended one wife, so that wife has to be of equal nature. So therefore, he's not recommending it at all. Does that make sense? Because it's a different nature. You're going to end up with all these mixed children. So the whole idea, you want to marry. Oh, it doesn't matter. But it's all about you. It's not about the child. It's not about the social effect, you know, about the child, you know, feeling comfortable or finding his place in society. It's all about just you. So that's not actually enough. That's not called a parent. That may be called a husband or a wife, but that's not called a parent. It's not called a member of the community. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Okay, and so then also it said is that the husband is born again as his son. So the point is then if the wife is of equal nature, then he'll be born in the same nature. If not, then you're having to deal with yourself. You know, it's like Jekyll and Hyde. It's yourself, but somehow or another not quite compatible. Okay, so this is... Okay. Twice-born men who in their folly wed Shudras soon degrade their families and their children to the state of Shudras. Vriti. Degraded to the position of Shudras indicates that their nature and qualities will be such, not that they are designated this by birth alone. No, it means that their nature will be mixed, so they will naturally perform activities that aren't recommended. So they'll just gradually with time, descend lower and lower, you know, culturally. That's all. Doesn't mean that they won't, you know, they may be doing business and this and that. So they have that skill. But by character, they'll be Shudras. Right? Because the normal thing is the character and the occupation should match. Right? So it's not good if the two are mixed. So one thing, if the character's higher, but it still won't do well for you. If you're a brahminical nature, but doing business, you know, people are going to take advantage. So it's not going to work. You know, you're a successful business. You have to be as cutthroat as they are. You know what I'm saying? So it becomes difficult. Riti. We did that. Okay. Then topic 7, marriage rites. Now listen to the brief descriptions of the following eight marriage rites used by the four varnas, which partially secure benefits and partially produce evil, both in this life and after death. Right? In other words, there's eight ways in which a man and woman can, connect themselves as husband and wife. Right? There's not a ninth way to do it. You know, I mean, it's not that, okay, if you take all these eight rites and you do it standing on your head, then you get, you know, like that, you get 16, right? You know, it's not like that. No, these are the eight ways. Now, some are recommended, some are not. Some, you know, produce good, some produce evil. Some produce a mix. So all it is that man is going through all the ways. So when you know everything, then you know what to favor and what to avoid, right? They are the rite of Brahman, Brahma, that of the gods, Daiva, that of the rishis, Arsha, and that of Prajapati, Prajapatya. That of the asuras, Asura, that of the Gandharvas, Gandharva, that of the Rakshasas, Rakshasa, and that of the Paisachas, Paisach. It's interesting how the first four, the name is a slight adjustment or different from the who they're named after. The last four had the same exact name as who they're named after. Right? In other words, these are the rites that these particular kinds of persons perform. Right? The Asura rite is how the Asuras get married. The Gandharva rite is how the Gandharvas get married. Does that make sense? Rites lawful for each Varna. Oh, no, here. Which is lawful for each varna and which are the virtues or faults of each rite, all this I will declare to you, as well as the good and evil results with respect to the offspring. Right? Because, see, in the Vedic, you have to consider also the children. Generally, in your higher echelons of society, they also worry about the children. Right? In your common society, they want to have children, but they're not worried that the effect of the marriage and what kind of marriage and all that has an effect on the children themselves. That they don't worry about because it's just spontaneous emotion, so it's just whatever happens. So they're not worried about it. You know. Mm. Like that. Okay, so, you know, it's like a... Yeah. kind of a mode of ignorance, que sera, sera. Rites lawful for each varna. One should know that the first six, according to the order, right? In other words, the order means the first is better than the second, or followed above are lawful for a Brahmin. Right? So there's lawful and then there's recommended. So it's not illegal for a Brahmin to use any of the first six. But, you know, it's less recommended as it goes down. Right? For the four last for a Kshatriya. And the same four, accepting the Rakshasa rite for the Vaishnava Shudra.
Right.
So the last four without Rakshasa for the Vaishnava Shudra. Saying these are lawful for Brahman and so on indicates they are not considered illegal. Right? This means, in other words, it's not sinful. But it's not necessarily recommended. It's not sinful. You know, like that. You know, just like fruit of activity for a devotee is not recommended, but it's not sinful. You know what I'm saying? If it's pious work, it's not sinful, but it's not recommended. Right? Because it gives a result that's not actually in line with what you want.
Right?
Does that make sense? So if a Brahmana is trying to obtain Brahman, then using these later rites will create obstacles for that, because the family life will be a little bit more crazy. Right? The sages state that the first four are approved in the case of a Brahmana, right? The first six are legal, but only the first four are approved. The Rakshasa rite in the case of a Kshatriya, right, is of the four is the most approved. And the Asura marriage, that of a Vaishya and a Shudra. Okay. Viti, in the previous verse, six rites were stated to be lawful for a Brahmin, but this verse clarifies that of those six, four approved. Of the four, the Brahmin rite is considered the most appropriate, as described in 3.5. The gift of daughters amongst Brahmanas is most approved by a libation of water, but in the case of other castes, it may be performed by the expression of mutual consent. So, in other words, the Brahma rite, of the four, now the Brahma rite is considered the best. Right? But in these institutes of the sacred law, three of the five last are declared to be lawful and two unlawful. The Paisach and the Asura rites must never be used. So he's saying is that technically these are, you know, not illegal. But according to Manu, since the whole point is that social upliftment, and as we saw, is that the whole point is that social upliftment to be connected to the Lord. So therefore, he says, the Paisach and the Asura must never be used. So that means even the Vaishyas and Shudras shouldn't use it, though it's recommended, the Asura. Paisach, it's not recommended for anybody. It means it's legal, but it's not approved for anybody. Right? But it's not legal for Brahmins. Right? So that makes sense. So then, yeah. So, the three of the last five are declared to be lawful are Prajapatya, Gandharva, and Rakshasa. Now we see by Prajapatya being put into there, it's not the ideal. But it's okay. It works quite well. Gandharva, those who must never be used, even by the Vaishnavas Shudras, are clearly stated, right? The Paisach and Asura. Okay. For Kshatriyas, those before mentioned two rites, the Gandharva and the Rakshasa, whether separate or mixed, are permitted by the sacred tradition. Right? So then they can use those, but then the others don't use them. Right? So basically, what you're saying here is, of the eight rites, then Asura and Praja and Paisach, no one should use them. Right? And of the last four, the Gandharva and the Rakshasa may be used by Kshatriyas. But, as it was said before, Brahmins don't use it, and Vaishyas and Shudras, though it's technically legal, it's not approved. Right? And then, okay, we're cool on that. Now, the more fun is that, in the Vritti, in the age of Kali, the Gandharva and the Rakshasa rites are also forbidden. Thus, there's only four rites are approved for use by the four Varnas in this age. So that, not only are they legal, they're approved. So then one doesn't have to worry. Stick to the first four, you're okay. Avoid the last four, then also good. Yeah? Okay, we're clear on that. And that means you don't know what they are. Now we'll explain them. The eight marriage rites, right? Because you have to explain before what's legal and not legal. Otherwise, explaining it, you might go, hey, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, so before doing that, you already want to know that, oh, that's not cool. Okay, so when they explain it, then it's all, yeah. You know. Right? You understand? Psychology. The eight marriage rites. The gift of a daughter after adorning her with costly garments and honoring her by presents of jewels to a man learned in the Veda and of good conduct, whom the father himself invites, is called the Brahma rite. All that together. Right? So that would be a proper Brahma rite. Right? That makes sense. So, gift of the daughter, right, means the father, he chose the boy, and now he's giving the boy to her. Right? And we'll notice this. The first...
Giving her to the boy? Said you give the boy to her.
Yeah, no, giving her to the boy. Yeah. No, the later one you have the reverse. I'm just getting ahead of myself. So so in other words, the common point of the first four rites, right, is that the father has approved the son for the daughter. In other words, he's involved in the whole process. Right? Of those four, three of them are where the father has, means the girl's side of the family, has approached the boy's side. Only one of them, the boy's side, approaches the girl. Right? But in the other ones, then it's not that the girl's side approached the boys at all. That's not present in any of the last four rites. That's why they're not recommended. Right? Because then this whole point of father-daughter, that whole relationship is not included in the marriage rite. You're not acknowledging that, right? And the daughter takes on the nature of the father, so therefore, if you don't maintain that relationship, if it's in good shape, then it's not going to work out well. Right. Okay. Now she's been dressed with costly garments. In other words, they're spending, you know, some time and money and making nice arrangements, nice, you know, clothes, nice ornaments, giving her all kinds of nice gifts and everything. Like that. And then the boy, that's on the girl's side. So the father's, the girl, the arrangement for the girl, and he has studied the Veda and is of good conduct. Right? So that's a Brahma rite. The gift of a daughter who has been bedecked with ornaments to a priest who duly officiates at a sacrifice during the course of its performance, they call the Daiva rite. So in other words, the first one, the father's made an endeavor to find the boy. The second one, he didn't make an endeavor like that. He's performing a sacrifice. The priest who is performing the sacrifice, he is impressed that he's of good character and good qualities, right? He has, you know, and he's the priest, means he has knowledge. He studied in the Veda, otherwise how he's doing that. He sees, here's a good match. In other words, he didn't find in the going out and looking. So there's less endeavor. But he's been able to notice, here's a good match. So then, it's the same thing as then, the daughter, you know, dressed nicely and all that, then is given to this, during the performance of the sacrifice. Right? So nowadays it'd be more tough, but before, you know, these sacrifices might go on for 9 months, or a year, like an Ashwamedha or these other, you know, Soma Yagya. Soma Yagya takes 9 months just to set it up. You know, but Soma Yagya wouldn't be able to, well, you might, but you generally wouldn't be able to do this with, because Soma Yagya, the priest has to have a wife. But for some of the other ones, they don't. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So, when you have a 9-month Yagya, there's plenty of time to figure it out and then make the arrangements and get married during the Yagya. But when you only have a, you know, 20-minute Yagya, you know, it may be a bit quick. You know? Okay. When the father gives away his daughter according to the rule, after receiving from the bridegroom for the fulfillment of the sacred law, a cow and a bull or two pairs, that is named the Arsha rite. So that means is the bridegroom is given a gift to the girl's family, right? And then then according to the rule, then he gives his daughter away in marriage. So in other words, the marriage rite is the same. So it's just a matter of, in the marriage rite, what is the situation that you've come to use the marriage rite? Right. The gift of a daughter by her father, after he has addressed the couple with the text, may both of you perform together your duties, and has shown honor to the bridegroom, is called in the Smriti the Prajapatya rite. Right? So in other words, the first three, it means the first two is the father found the boy, right? The third one, the boys approached the father, right? And so therefore it's approved. In this last one, the arrangement's been made, but then the father approves it. Does that make sense? We get that. So all these four, but in all of them, you notice that he gives away his daughter. So it's always the father's giving away the daughter. And he's honored the bridegroom because the other ones he's already honored by accepting him, acknowledging. So here is that he's honored because now he's accepted and he, you know, he's a good bloke, you know, so it's okay. Vriti. Right? This rite applies when the father, unable to make a suitable match, approves of a suitable candidate chosen through the girl's own arrangements. The Swayamvar Saramod would also be included under this heading. Right? So, but that means she's made the arrangements. The father couldn't find someone, right? So she made arrangements, right? But the important point is here is also why you'll see it'll be better than the one before that, the Arsha, because the girl's chosen the boy rather than the boy the girl, right? That's always stronger. The girl's attached to the boy, it's always a stronger relationship than the boy's attached to the girl, right? Because if the boy is trained, right, then her attachment will mean she'll be following a proper course of lifestyle and etiquette. He's attached to her. Due to that attachment, he may have to compromise that because of his attachment. Right? Does that make sense? Because the girl always knows where your weakness is. Does that make sense? So in this case, it may not work out as well. It may work out as well, but it's more of a gamble. So then in the ninth chapter, then it describes detail on this. 3 years let a damsel wait, though she be marriageable. But after that time, let her choose for herself a bridegroom of equal caste and rank. So it still is the same qualifications. So whether the father picks the girl or she picks the boy, father picks the boy or she picks the boy, the qualifications of the boy are the same. Right, that doesn't change. It's just who picks. That's all. It's not that, well, the father didn't pick, so he can be, you know, go into that and that. But if she picks, it's just whoever she likes. If not being given in marriage, she herself seeks a husband. She incurs no guilt, nor does he whom she weds. Right. So you can't say, well, she picked her own husband, so she's sinful, or he's sinful because he married a girl that picked her. No, it's like, if the father couldn't arrange, it's not a problem. But if there was that time is there, so it means if she's still under the father's care and she's just become of marriageable age, and then she does that, then that's not considered right. But she says, wait 3 years. It's not saying wait 10 years. It's saying wait 3 years. So that's not a long time. Okay, it's forever in teenage years, but you know, it's not that long. It's workable. Right? A maiden who chooses for herself shall not take with her any ornaments given by her father or her mother or her brothers. If she carries them in the way, it will be theft. That is the weak side of it for the girl, is that all the different things that have been given by the she doesn't take those with her. She's made her own arrangements. Because the point is, in other words, they make arrangements, so then they arrange things beforehand. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, now, the daughter is born, right? So you don't know if it's a boy or a girl. When the daughter is born, what do you start doing? Right? You start putting away money or gold for when she gets married. So that is not what you can take with you. You can't say, well, you arranged all that, but then, you know, the boy is there. Okay, she can't claim it. You know, but if they give her gifts, you know, at the marriage ceremony, that she can take. So if they give it, it's fine. But she can't claim it because it was for her. Right, but the girl who that's been put aside for her, and then the father's arranging the marriage, Then, it, you know, if something comes up and you know, somebody decided they wanted it, or the brother decides why she should get it, I should get it, then no, it's her right to get it. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So Manu does get really practical here. Yes.
For these four types of marriage rights.
A little bit louder.
For these four types of marriage rights, can you give examples from Bhagavatam? Like,
give examples from Bhagavatam.
Like these marriages.
But why do you need an example from Bhagavatam to figure that out? No, but you would like more better, but is this a Purana class? You know what I'm saying? This is a Dharma Shastra class, right? You know what I'm saying? So if you don't understand it, that's one thing. But if you understand it, but just you'd like to hear stories.
Just the example, like they.
But why do you need that? That you gave yourself. Devahuti and Kardama is example that the father's made the arrangements and then he's come and then it's been approved and he gives away his daughter. Right? It means wherever you see the Swayamvars, like Draupadi and this and that, then that's the Prajapati. Right? But they use mixes. So the Prajapati is there, but then they use all the rituals and everything from the Brahma. So generally speaking, everybody uses the Brahma as the thing, but how it was initiated may or may not have been Brahma. Right? Like that. From the Bhagavatam, generally, because it's not an ideal thing, I don't know of any ones where the boy approaches the girl's family. Right? Is that? You know, so you generally only hear those, because they're Kshatriyas, therefore that's used. Or you hear about Rakshasa from Kshatriyas. Like Arjuna stole Subhadra, that's Rakshasa. Right? Does that make sense?
Lord Krishna stealing
Rukmini. Yeah, stealing Rukmini would be also.
In the temple, when the temple president made an arrangement.
Yes.
Was that substituting the father?
Yeah, I mean, somebody is acting in that capacity of a guardian who is therefore making the arrangement. Because the point is like this. Now, if we say of equal nature, and, you know, character, proper families, background. How much time will that take to go through? It may take some time. And during that time of working that out, can it be influenced by emotions? You understand? It shouldn't be. Right? So that means you have to be using your intelligence. The emotion's there that you want to make a good arrangement because you have value for your daughter or son, right? But the point is you can't have the emotions cloud the intelligence, right? So now, if a parent or somebody else, a brother or a well-wisher is arranging, are they going to be clouded by this? No, because they're not the one getting married. But now, if the boy or girl goes out looking for themselves, if the packaging is good, who cares for the rest of it? You know what I'm saying? And then you have, of course, the modern thing, you know, being very intelligent here, I'm going out, I'm checking for myself. Right? So now they check, they spend time together, they live together, they do whatever it is, that, you know, whatever goes on together. And the whole thing is that, so by the time they've done that, and then they decide, yes, I think this could work. What's been the basis of their deciding this? Intelligence or attachment? Attachment. Okay. Not intelligence. Right? Does that make sense? And so, then what? Now they'll go through all the procedure to check. Oh, okay, well, what's the charts, this and that, you know, what are you into, and what's the lifestyle? But now what happens if the charts are bad?
Attachment,
they're going to go ahead anyway. So now what are they going to quote? What are they going to say?
Love will conquer all.
Love will conquer all, okay. Good romantic. Let's get some Shastric here. Yukta Vairagya.
Time,
place, and circumstance. We're devotees. We're not bound by all this conditioning. It's exactly their malecha conditioning is why they are, you know, doing it this way in the first place. You understand? So that's the problem. So it never work out. I've seen it so many times. You know, oh, what to do, it's this and that, and how much does it apply, and, you know, but we're devoted, if we're chanting, then it won't, you know, yeah, well, if you're chanting, there's not a problem. It's when you stop chanting and she stops chanting that the argument starts. No one's arguing while they're chanting, you know? You know, unless they're sitting around, you missed a mantra. You call that chanting? It is like, okay. Yeah, that goes back to the one back here. You know, it was disagreeable.
Yeah, disagreeable. Yeah. Red eyes.
Excessively disagreeable. Okay. Okay. When the bridegroom, because this ninth chapter is what he's talking about inheritance. Right? So the inheritance of a girl is what she gets from the father at marriage. So she can't claim anything. So it's just, you know, if, in other words, if the father really liked her arrangement, he'll give a lot. If he doesn't, he may give her nothing. She can't complain. Because it's not a Brahma rite. That's why you see is in the Brahma and in the Daiva, she's bedecked with ornaments. In the other one, it doesn't mention that. She doesn't have to be given all kinds of facilities and presents. The first two, yes. The second, the third, and the fourth, no. Because it may not be an ideal arrangement. So if the father doesn't really like it, but, you know, it's workable enough that he'll give his approval. But he doesn't really like it, or he hates the family, or, you know, something about it, or he wanted to do and she just went behind. You know, whatever may be the, you know, the melodramatic themes that you can, you know, put into your next, you know, TV serial. Yes?
It reminds me of my father saying something very funny. There was a couple close, they give a very expensive gift, and 1 week after, so they got separated. And he said, there should be a clause. If they don't stay together for that period, we get back.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because yeah, if it's not within the time that the shop will take it back, right? So the shop will take it back within 10 days. Within 10 days, they get it back. Yeah. That's a very good point.
That's actually true.
Yeah, that should all be written into the prenup, right?
Or they should wait for 10 days.
Yeah, before giving the gift. Yeah. Have the marriage and then have the reception after 10 days. But then the people might keep it together just for those 10 days. Okay. When the bridegroom receives a maiden after having given as much wealth as he can afford to the kinsman and to the bride herself, according to his own will, that is called the Asura rite. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, technically speaking, though the emotional platform is there, but if you look at it just legalistically, he bought the girl. Right? Does that make sense? That's why Manu doesn't approve of it, because it doesn't have that great of a emotional foundation. But in cultures who practice this, then it's a great, how you say it? Prestige. Oh, you know, they gave this much, you know, for as the you know, the presentation for the girl, you know, oh, you know, they, you know, twice as much as everybody else. So it's a big prestige, you know, that she's so valuable and all that. But it's not recommended. Right. So that's why he said as before, as the Vaishyas would use that one, right? But because then it's, we got more money, so they'll show you, you know, it's a prestige, so they'll give a lot of money. So people get benefit at least. But it's not recommended as far as the dynamic of the relationship. Vriti, following verses from the ninth chapter describe further the inappropriateness of the Asuric rite. Even a Shudra ought not to take a nuptial fee. Right? So it's even saying Shudras who might or might not be so worried about all these different, even they shouldn't do it. When he gives away his daughter, for he who takes a fee sells his daughter, covering the transaction by another name. Right? You just, in other words, covering the transaction. We're talking about political correctness,
yes.
Like that. You know, using a euphemism. You're just saying it's a, you know, like that. Like if I say nuptial fee, it sounds really good. You know, like that. Neither ancients nor moderns, who are good men, have done such a deed. Right? Neither ancients nor moderns. Right? Now, how many millions of years ago was this spoken? Right? So it says ancients or moderns. Yeah. Modern simply means those persons who are present at the time. That's all. So it's not that it's a special thing in itself. It just means you're doing something now. Right? It also, what we see mean later, the moderns means those who don't follow the Vedas. Because then they only are, their only connection is in the present. So because their identity is what's happening right now. You know? And then, you know, what happened before, that's a different, what will happen in the future is another. But if you're following the Vedas, what happened before is the same thing you're doing now, and it's the same thing people do in the future. So it's eternal. So modern means someone living a life in the temporary sphere. And Vedic means they're living in the eternal sphere. Does that make sense? Or situation like that. Nor indeed, neither ancients nor modern who are good men have done such a deed that after promising a daughter to one man, they have given her to another. That's also another aspect, is that she's been promised to the one, but then that this one will give more money, or it'll be more prestigious to the family, so they give to another. Right? So no one cultured ever does that. If the promise has been made, then it's kept. Nor indeed have we heard, even in former creations, of such a thing as the covert sale of a daughter for a fixed price, called a nuptial fee. Okay, so now here, when they're dealing with this, they're making the point. And then they're giving example of something that you're going to agree to, right? You know, that you promised the girl to one boy and then giving him to another. No one will agree to that. Everyone will say, that's bad. So, in the same way, we haven't heard of, you know, that the daughter is sold for a price, but we give it a different name so it doesn't sound like you're selling it. You know what I'm saying? That's also a technique, is that you say something is more common that everybody will agree to, then you get more specific. Because if you start with the specific, some may or may not agree, but if you use the general, everybody will agree, so then seeing this in line with that, then it works. Does that make sense?
Dowry,
but the thing is it means the dowry is the name of covering it.
Transaction.
Yeah, covert sale means that transaction by another name. Means the dowry, the giving of the dowry is not, but the term dowry is what they're using. The dowry is also the gift of the father to the daughter. Because she doesn't get inheritance when he dies, right? Means it's like this. You know, who's going to wait longer, the boy or the girl? The girl. Girl, huh? She has a tendency to wait longer for anything. Means like, let's say, she wants a Gucci bag. So she's going to wait forever for it, or she wants it yesterday? Yesterday, right? But the boy, you know, he knows he wants, you know, this thing. He'll work for many years and put his money away and like that. Girls may do it, but that would become considered something special. If the boy did it, that would be just, you know, a proper boy, nothing special, but, you know, proper. But if the girl did it, oh wow. Okay, you understand?
Yeah.
So in other words, the girl doesn't have to wait until the father dies. That's one thing. You know, to get anything. Two is, would the girl want something that she got only because her father died? You understand? Because then that item is connected with her father's death. So then she gets beforehand, because then this is what the father gave when he was alive. You know, when the daughter gets married, the mood is good. He's very fired up and all that. You know, it's just, you know, the good comes out. I think we just had a marriage very recently. Right, and there, and the father who came hasn't been around or seen the family in 15 years. Nothing to do with him. Zip, nothing. And he just shut it. So it somehow or another brings out the best. So therefore, what's given at the time, that will have the best mood. So that's why that's the time when the girl's inheritance is given. Right. Plus, also now it means that he's doing okay. He's at the end, you know, near retirement, but he hasn't retired. Because once you retire, then you start eating up your savings. So you give it while it's still. Does that make sense? So there's so many aspects. Does that make sense? So therefore, that time is chosen. Right. So then, dowry can mean it is her inheritance. But it also can mean is that, you know, it's given to the boy or this and that, or all these different other things, how they apply it. But that's not how it's used. Because we don't see in any of these where the girl has to give money to the boy. She comes nicely dressed and decorated, but that's her ornaments. That's her stuff. In other words, what the girl comes with is hers. Now, if they also want to give some gift to the boy, that's nice. You know what I'm saying? But what she comes with is there. So it's a matter of what is the gift, what is the this and that. So it's all the mood in which it's done. You know?
I remember as a child reading in the newspaper that there were many suicidal girls because they were involved in this business transaction, and then they discovered it was only business. And
yeah, yeah.
They wouldn't be married.
Yeah, so it becomes a problem. It means if the whole society, that's what they do, then they also, besides covering the particular transaction, they cover the whole concept of the ceremony. Like I was saying before, there are cultures where you're talking about millions and millions of people, you know, that they follow that. And but they look at it from the point that, you know, it's a matter of how much was given. You know, in other words, how much the daughter was sold for is how much her own value. You know what I'm saying? So then that's a prestige, you know. You know, the guy gave, you know, $10,000, you know, while someone else only gave $1,000, someone else gave $100,000. So, you know, like that. So then it becomes a whole, like that. There are even some, as even I heard one community in India that in the modern, I don't know how far back this goes, but when the girl is, I mean, at the marriage ceremony, you know, or at the reception or that at some point in there, when everybody's there, then it's read out how much the father has given for the daughter in a, you know, an account that's there specifically if the wedding falls apart. You know, in other words, she has something. It's her own thing. It's there for, you know, if something goes wrong, she has like that. And everybody's impressed how much is in there. Ooh, wow, he's really taking care. You know, it's like that. So it's a prestige. You know, because I guess that community is not known for marriages holding together.
So that comes in Rasulullah, right?
No, it's going the other way. The father's giving for the daughter. So it's that, but it's not like, you know, toasters and those kind of stuff. You know, this is just money that's there if the marriage doesn't work. Or let's say, you know, there's a fight and an argument, and then she, you know, she storms out of the house. She has money. She can go to the hotel or go, you know, go to the Bahamas or, you know, whatever she wants to do. You know, like that. So it's just, you know, that community works like that. You understand? So they make it sound great. You know, because it's just their practice. It, huh?
Make it sound independent. Maybe.
Yeah, it sounds nice. So the same way as what I'm saying is those who follow these other rites, you know, we haven't gotten to the place such yet. So otherwise, you could turn that into that. You know, she was so attractive. What could I do? You know, it's like this and that. So does that make sense? And everyone go, yeah, I know what you mean. You know, it's like, does that make sense? Okay. Okay, the voluntary union of a maiden and her lover, one must know to be the Gandharva rite. So that means voluntary on both sides, which springs from desire and has sexual intercourse for its purpose. Right. So just very straightforward. Right. The forcible abduction of a maiden, so that means basically nowadays everybody's using Gandharva rite. Right. Then afterwards they may confirm it with one of those first four. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But they're already living together. So even you say, no, we don't believe in marriage. De facto is a Gandharva rite. That's why we're saying these are the eight ways that you can combine a man and a woman in a, you know, marriage situation. Right? They don't want to call it marriage. Hey, cool. You know, I don't call it lunch. You know, I just call it, you know, how you say, midday, you know, nourishment. Like that. We don't eat lunch. Right? Lunch is for, you know, sense enjoyers. Right? You know, I changed the name. And, oh, yeah, cool. Okay. Then the forcible abduction of a maiden from her home while she cries out and weeps after breaking into their houses and her kinsmen have been beaten or wounded is called the Rakshasa rite. Right? In other words, the boy comes in, you know, himself and with his friends, and grabs the girl and runs off while fighting everybody on the way out. That's called the Rakshasa rite. So that's how the Rakshasas like to do it. You know? They want, they take. You know, but you have to remember, as a Rakshasa, the family members are Rakshasas also. So you might get killed in the process. You know, and if it does, it's kind of like, oh well. You know. What to do? Yeah, he wasn't good enough anyway. So he was a wimp. You know. Okay, when a man by stealth seduces a girl who is sleeping, intoxicated, or disoriented in intellect, that is the eighth, the most base and sinful rite of the Paisachas. Paisachas are a variety of ghosts. Right? Like that. So in other words, that's how they get married.
Okay.
Right? I mean, they're subtle anyway, so I mean, it's just not a big deal. So. Right? Does that make sense? So these that means the Paisach and the selling of the girl. Those two are, this Manu just says, they're not to be used at all. Like that. Okay. The gift of daughters among Brahmanas is most approved. It is preceded, if it is preceded by a libation of water, but in the case of others' castes, it may be performed by the expression of mutual consent. So in other words, less formal, you just mutual consent, and then it's there. But the libation of water means you pour water, means it's a contract she's given. Like that. You know, like when you do the rite and then you pour the water, then that means whatever is done. So that's how the Vedic works. For moderns, you scribble on a piece of paper. There is you pour water. Like that. Because the point is you can't promise something to a Brahmin and then not. You can say it's mutual consent. Well, we didn't exactly and all that. You don't want to start that kind of, it didn't work out good for Nriga. Right? King Nriga, it didn't work out. That something was given to one Brahmin, ended up with another. Not good. Right? So with the others, then if that does happen, you're not going to get, it's just, you know, the honesty or this or that, but you won't get a reaction for stealing from a Brahmin. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because if you promise it to a Brahmin, it's a Brahmin's. Then if you give it to someone else, you stole from a Brahmin, so the reaction is very great. It becomes a Mahapap. While the other one is just, you know, you're a rat bag, that's all. Does that make sense? So mutual consent is enough. You know, so generally it'll work out anyway. Because if the Kshatriya is, if you don't, then, you know, there's trouble. Like Brahman, what can he do to you? But a Kshatriya, he'll come with his army and, you know, burn your fort down, right? You know, so there's a problem there. Or Vaishyas, you know, you don't want to mess with them either. Because, you know, because they can do a lot of harm to you in the business world. Right? And Shudras, what can you do? It happens. You know what I'm saying?
The story of Sakshi Gopal is the example of
Brahman. Yeah, like that. Yeah, so they're just saying it was there because there was no libation of water. So there was, once the libation of water is there, it's formal, it's official, so they can't complain. So you just, the Brahmins, there's a good chance to be less problem, but the same is you don't want any problem. While the others, there may be more problem, but the problem will be less. You know what I'm saying? In other words, Brahmins don't want to sit there and argue about it. You know, that's not their business, you know. Okay. So, we'll continue later. So.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
Jaya
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
Jaya
Chaitanya Gaura Prema. Is anybody?